It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff's here. Stacy's here. Lots to talk about. What did Mark Zuckerberg's 6,000-word letter to the Facebook family mean? Ben Thompson says Mark wants to take over the world. Jeff disagrees. We're going to have a little debate over that. And Jeff doesn't like that new Chromebook that I like so much, the Samsung Chromebook Plus. We'll debate about that as well. Plus, Stacy has a new browser that will change the lights in your room. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 393, recorded Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. Echo, watch Roku. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twig. And by Curry, a real-life robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. It's time for Twig. This Week in Google, show where we cover, I don't even know what to say these days, everything in the media, in the Google, in the Internet of Things. Thank goodness we have Stacey Higginbotham here. She covers IoT on her podcast, Stacey on IoT and IoTpodcast.com. And she joins us from Austin, Texas, the most gerrymandered county in the country, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I live in this tiny little subsegment that goes all the way up to Waco.
You're in a blue slice.
Oh, no, I am in the reddest slice.
You're in a red slice. Okay. Jeff Jarvis, he's in New Jersey. There's no color you can apply to Jersey.
I'm in a red slice.
He's in a red slice, too. From BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, author of...
Our governor's up for a job on sports radio in New York.
You're talking about, what's his name?
Christie.
Chris Christie, he'd be great at sports radio.
Yeah.
He'd be great. It's a bit of a come down from the job he was hoping to get, but it's... I think sports talk's pretty good. Actually, you know, that brings me to Ben Thompson's great article in Stratechery today. Ben is really a great and insightful analyst. We've had him on many times on this show and on Twit. His piece, actually, from yesterday, Manifestos and Monopolies, is his discussion of Mark Zuckerberg's 6,000-word screed on Facebook as to what the new Facebook mission statement was. Facebook went from a one-sentence mission statement to a 5,000 sentence. But the line here that I thought was very interesting is kind of germane to our speculation that Mark Zuckerberg might be, you know, interested in political office. And he points out that Zuckerberg, as the CEO of Facebook, has probably a much better bully pulpit than any president. Let me read you the paragraph. Given this reality, Ben Thompson writes, why would Zuckerberg want to be president? He's not only CEO of Facebook, he's the dominant shareholder as well, answerable to no one. His power and ability to influence is greater than any president, subject to political reality and checks and balances. Besides, as Zuckerberg made clear last week, his concern is not a mere country, but rather the entire world. He's president of the globe.
Yeah, I put like four more reactions to Zuckerberg's essay on the rundown, and they all pissed me off. Because if he sat back and just said, you know, I just run a business, I don't give a the crap about the world. Sorry about that. You know, that's all I do is run a business. To heck with all you all. Then we'd be smashing them like crazy.
That's kind of what he said all along when he, you know, kind of sheepishly and self-deprecatingly said, oh, we didn't change the results of the election.
He's always
we don't have that much power.
Yeah, but he's always said he cares about a connected world, and a connected world's a better world. He's always had that mission.
Right.
And so now he goes into more depth about it and more detail about what he wants to do and where he thinks he can help. And everybody smashes him. They smash him for trying to take over the world. That was one theme. And the other theme, of course, was journalists feeling terribly entitled. Emily Bell at Columbia, I thought, was demanding that all the tech companies.
Yeah.
I didn't begin. All the tech companies should give $1 billion each to some fund to pay for journalists. No, they should be helping us strategically. And Steve Waldman, who's a friend of mine, wrote a piece in the New York Times saying basically the same thing. And I'm tearing my hair out because then somebody else just wrote a piece who's I'm suddenly forgetting who Charlie Beckett. From London School of Economics, wrote a piece saying, whoa, if you're going to demand they give away money, which is pretty cheeky as is, why should they give it away to journalism? Why not health? Why not saving right. lives? Why not other things? You know, who's to say that we're so entitled and that they owe us anything? They don't owe journalism crap. They owe the public a lot, but they don't owe journalism anything.
Well, okay, so that aside, Zuckerberg, I tried to read the 6,000 word thing. It seemed like a lot of, well, I couldn't quite get through the whole thing.
Stacey, did you make it?
No, 3/4 of the way. Whenever he started talking about civility, stop.
She just screamed F you and stormed away.
It was a lot of, it was a whole
lot of civility stuff. I said you need an editor.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
It did. It could have probably said the whole thing in a paragraph. And it, but what Ben Thompson points out is the global aspirations that Zuckerberg's talking about here, right? I mean, and of course, that's Facebook is a global company. It's not an American company anymore. It's a global.
So was Exxon, you know. So yeah. So was Walmart. So,
but I thought what I thought was interesting, and actually, the upshot of Ben's article is we should be worried about Facebook, and we should do what we can to reduce its growing influence. For instance, it should be prohibited, and I'm not sure I disagree with this, it should be prohibited from buying companies like WhatsApp and Instagram or any social media companies, because that just boosts its network, you know, its graph.
That's a simple, we have laws about that. We have antitrust laws about
that. And it really is an antitrust, because he says, and it may be too late to stop Facebook at this point, because their social graph is so massive and everybody's in it, that no one else can get a word in edgewise, in effect. And so anybody week, who does, week, like we'll, Instagram or WhatsApp, Facebook just goes, yeah, we'll take that. $22 billion, no big deal. And now when you are on Instagram, you're on Facebook. When you're on WhatsApp, you're on Facebook, really.
And next week we'll have stories proclaiming that Facebook's over. It's over. Everybody's on,
well, that's,
on
Snapchat. He's responding to that, though. And by the way, the article, I think there's a very good case to be made, and there's certainly numbers to back it up, that Snapchat, which is about to go public, Snap, is actually at its peak. And in fact, Instagram, as soon as they started doing stories, started to eat away at Snapchat's audience, and that Snapchat may be on the way out just because Instagram has the social graph. Stacey, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was actually just going to, everybody's always too big and no one else can get, like, once a company reaches a certain size, that's kind of an accepted argument. But I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but it's the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index for, I know that applies to mobile companies, but has the FTC ever applied it to any social media M&A?
What is that? Tell us what that index is.
What's that? I don't know what that is.
It's a market share index. It's the only reason I know about it is because we talk about it a lot in wireless, for like when the carriers are doing M&A. And I have no idea if it applies because I'm not an antitrust lawyer. So this would be the FTC and the U.S. Department of Justice, I guess.
It measures market concentration.
Yes.
It's calculated by squaring the market share of each firm competing in the market, then summing the resulting numbers. And actually, the Department of Justice uses this to pinpoint merger issues, you know.
Well, and when you were talking about buying, I mean, because what you're essentially making is kind of an antitrust market power argument against these guys, right? In social media.
Yes.
And so if you can't buy, like, to say, now the problem is these are private companies, so I don't think the DOJ gets a say.
But
I don't
Facebook's
know
not works. Private.
Yeah, Facebook's not private now. So this is something to pose to someone far smarter than I am, but I was just curious if there was a there or a way to prevent market power.
Thompson says it's terrifying. Given their power, he wrote this last year, given their power over what users see, Facebook could, if it choose, be the most potent political force in the world. Of course, it doesn't do that because, you know, that becomes, then it becomes a real problem. There'll be a furor over this. And so Facebook has strong incentive not to become overtly political.
I was at a round table of media executives and Facebook last week. It was off the record, so I can't, you know, give any details. But I was very, I mean, I'm impressed about how careful Facebook is about that. And there were times when the funny thing about it was the media people were pushing Facebook saying, you know, people are wrong about that. Just correct them. Just do it. Just fix it. Just make them smarter. And Facebook's kind of saying
that can't do it.
Whoa, no. I mean, you know,
fake news argument rebound, by the way, in a very damaging way. And it's now being used incorrectly, in my opinion, to tar all media.
By Donald Trump?
Yeah. It turned out to be.
Yeah.
And I was a little concerned about this sobriquet of false news because it had this little tint of, well, it's false news because it's against what I believe in. You know, it was already had that seed, and now that seed has been planted and bloomed. And now anything's fake news that disagrees with me.
Exactly. So fake news, I said in a piece I wrote this week that we're stuck in a paradoxical loop.
We can't use that phrase anymore, I would submit.
Right? No, oh no, you can't at all.
It's been co-opted. We shouldn't have propaganda,
lies, and fraud. There's three separate things. Propaganda, lies, and fraud.
That's good. I like it.
Claire Wardell, who's the head of the First Draft Coalition, is just brilliant. And it's a coalition of a bunch of news organizations. Google started funding it. Knight did. Facebook did. She put up, I don't have it, maybe I have it handy. She has a taxonomy of, oh, damn, no, it's on Twitter. I'm going to save it. She has a taxonomy of fakery from, you know, simple mistakes up to full-fledged fraud and different motives for each one. Yeah, fake news is ridiculous. And now it's used so that anything that one side disagrees with, it's just fake news.
Let me go on, though. This is what Ben says. This is why, you know, going back to, as you said, Facebook's now very sensitive about not, you know, about staying completely neutral. And really, as I've always said, its only motivation is the simple financial motivation to improve engagement. Of course, that leads to filter bubbles. But he says, this is why I read Zuckerberg's manifesto with such alarm. Zuckerberg not only gives his perspective on how the world is changing and, at least in passing, some small admission that Facebook's focus on engagement may have driven things like filter bubbles and fake news, but, and this is the worrisome part from Ben's point of view, for the first time explicitly commits Facebook to playing a central role in effecting that change in a manner that aligns with Zuckerberg's personal views of the world. It is a manifesto building global community based on Mark's personal vision of what the world should be.
That's like what every newspaper in the world is built on.
Exactly.
But these newspapers don't have the power that Facebook does.
One point in time, they did.
Well, I know. I mean, Hearst was able to start the Spanish-American War.
There is no such thing as objective anything. I mean, if we're talking about humans, there's no such thing as objective.
But in the old days, there at least were multiple newspapers and multiple voices.
And Facebook enables more voices than we've ever had in the history of mankind.
People don't follow them.
That's like they didn't subscribe
to the competing newspapers.
Exactly. Bingo.
Sorry.
Stacey.
Jeff and I almost never agree so strongly. I'm like, especially about journalism.
Stacey's now very worried. Yeah.
I'm like, what is happening? Hold on.
Well, and one of the things that Ben is arguing for is, Zuck says that, you know, progress now requires humanity coming together, not just as cities or nations, but as a global community. This is, you know, New World Order stuff, the global community. There's just one problem, says Ben. First, he may be wrong. It's just as plausible to argue that the ultimate end state of the internet revolution is a devolution of power to smaller, more responsive, self-selected entities, local government,
which,
in effect.
Well, not necessarily geographically local, but local to interest. And Facebook is a platform for just that as well. Facebook is a platform where you can find people who are like you. You can speak, thus be found, find, organize, and act.
Well, so you're going to dispute this key sentence then, because Ben believes he's proven that Mark wants to kind of get involved in global governance. In other words, he's saying Mark doesn't want to be president. He wants to be president of the world.
That's the worst conspiracy theory language. He says, trilateral commission.
Tom. Yeah, it is. He says, even if Zuckerberg is right, that it's all about global community, is there anyone who believes that a private company, well, that's not really true, but I guess it's private in the sense it's mostly owned by Mark Zuckerberg, run by an unaccountable, all-powerful person that tracks your every move for the purpose of selling advertising is the best possible form said global governance should take. So you would dispute that notion that Mark wants to rule the world.
Yes, A. B, it's not global governance. It's a platform that people can do whatever they want.
But didn't his letter kind of imply that, hey, we can use Facebook for global governance or
we can use Facebook to connect people better into civic dialogue. Stacey's right. It's exactly the same argument that journalism made for years, is that we drive civic engagement. We get you to care about your world, do something about it. Right. That's all he's arguing. And then the journalists come along and say, hey, that's our job. Don't take that away.
Right.
He actually talk about things like with site search and raising money. So that goes beyond a conversation in enabling people to take action. So I suppose if you look at it, it's like a government's providing a service. He's providing some services.
Yeah, he'd like to, for instance, with internet.org, provide internet to a billion or two people who don't have internet right now. And the internet in his vision is primarily Facebook.
The internet in a lot of people's vision is Facebook. I know that's weird.
Yeah. So, well, a lot of users, you mean?
Yes.
So
like, this is people, no different. Like from, you know, boy,
that's how AOL was in the early days, right? It was the internet.
So I've talked to some Google folks lately, and I sense that they're engaging in Schadenfreude. That they said German word time, and the
you know, shameful joy in the disappointment of others
Google
others.
Google was on the hot seat for a couple of years. Google was the internet, and Eric Schmidt said this: anytime the internet's going to be complained about, Google's going to be complained about because we're the largest thing on it, and everybody's going to go after Google, and they did. And the Leistungsschutzrecht and all this stuff came along. Now, because of the fake news thing, suddenly Facebook is on the hot seat. Google's saying, "Hoo-hoo, it us."
Yeah, you know they're loving it because of the privacy arguments, all this stuff now is not about Google, which it used to be. It's all about Facebook, right? Facebook has taken a lot of heat off.
But it's the same absurdity.
But they had the same problem. If Google has exactly the same problem.
Google was taking over the world. Now Facebook's taking over the world. Microsoft was taking over the world before them.
So you guys, and Stacey and Jeff, it's your opinion that there's nothing. First of all, congratulations on having read the almost entirety of Mark's comments.
It's like all Jeff.
It just seemed like marketing gobbledygook to me. It was very difficult for me to tease any, initiatives out of it. Were there initiatives in there? I mean, Ben's saying the initiative is global government. I don't know if that's
Ben's
true.
Ben's a smart guy, but BS. Again, that's trilateral commission talk. That's anti-globalism talk. It's not only global now, but somebody's going to take over the globe.
Well, I left out the first few paragraphs, which really set the stage for all of this. And I thought these were quite insightful.
He's very, very well written, very smart, but I think he's wrong.
He says that, you know, in his little cartoony way, in the old world, somebody made something and sold it to a consumer. Of course, in the industrial era, it got sliced up into three slices: manufacturing, or content creation, or and then distribution, and then consumers. But what's happened in the internet era is this whole distribution thing has become not only commoditized but devalued. So the fundamental impact of the internet is to make distribution itself a cheap commodity, or in the case of digital content, completely free. By the way, that's what Twit piggybacks itself on. We can reach our audience directly because distribution is effectively free. He says, that's why I've long argued the internet revolution is as momentous as the industrial revolution. And then
it's Gutenberg.
Gutenberg, baby. And then what he's saying now is The funnel is the new model, he says. In this brave new world, power not comes not from production, not from you and me, Jeff, and Stacy, the content creators, and not from distribution, obviously, but from controlling consumption. All markets will be demand-driven. The extent to which they already are is a function of how digitized they become. He says Facebook is the funnel.
Is that? But that's still an old world Weltanschauung, third German word, worldview. That is arguing that we're in a production-based rather than a service-based economy. Google is a personal services company. Facebook is a service company. Content does not have any value anymore. It's not a product that we need to make anymore. That's a Gutenberg-era notion, and that's out the window.
Well, that's bad news for you and me and every newspaper and journalist in the country. We're content creators.
Because you have the dear people who are watching us now for even longer than it would take to read Zuckerberg's essay, are a community built around you, Leo, and around the shared interests. And that's different from saying we make a product called content that you're going to watch. The interactivity that exists, the relationships that exist, the sense of.
So it's more about relationship than it is about
Amen, brother.
But without content, there's no relation. I mean, the relationship is based on a trade of information.
But content is merely a vehicle for carrying information.
But I you trade your attention, gentle viewer and listener, for my information or entertainment or I don't know, whatever it is you get out of it.
I think you're arguing, and I don't know the distinction here, but what you're talking about, what Zuckerberg is talking about, is the attention economy kind of concept.
Yes, I think so.
What Jeff is talking about is based on services. And so, yes, people are giving you their attention in the exchange, not for your content, but the service you actually provide in their life, which is things like, how do I work with, how do I load my Microsoft without with a different browser?
So it's a service. Okay. I mean, I think that's a difference without a distinction. I mean,
it's a big distinction. It's a big distinction because it changes the relationship, it changes the economic basis. I mean, look at Google Home, right? Is this content? No, this is a service. Now, it's going to tell me things. It's going to give me information.
It's a distribution mechanism.
Yes. Well, in Ben's, it's an aggregator. In Ben's, worldview, in his model, that's exactly what he's talking about. That Google Home is the equivalent of the Facebook funnel. It's the aggregator that becomes the conduit. It's the new kind
of distribution. The value to me, unless I'm playing music, the value to me is not that I consumed something. The value to me is that I learned something that I wanted to use.
Yeah, but that's
Jeff he's not paying attention to it. It's not seeking his attention. All it is providing a service. Again, difference without or distinction without a difference or whatever you just said, Leo. I can't remember. I can never remember that phrase. it's just a really nuanced way of looking at how this works.
Yes. It's too nuanced
Thank
for
you,
me.
Thank you, Stacey.
I don't get it.
I'm sorry.
But I'm thick.
Don't apologize, Stacey. You're right. You're saying it better than I can.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit back and let you guys.
See, this is terrible when Jeff and I actually agree. We just gang up
What's
on Leo.
What's so wrong with that, Stacey? What's so wrong with that?
I like being ganged up on. I don't know why. I'm a little kinky. But truthfully, I do like being, because what I don't, the risk of sitting in this chair is that I gang up on everybody else. So I want you guys to speak in concert against. Unlike Mark Zuckerberg, I want you to knock me down a peg. All right. Well, anyway, we got. I mean, I'm trying to get some sort of handle on this. I've been asking every smart person I know. What did Mark say? What does that mean? And I think your position, Jeff, is Mark was widely misunderstood, I guess.
Yeah, I think people, what's behind the black box? What's the big mystery? What are they doing? What's going on there? Well, then he takes 6,000 words to say, here's what I'm trying to do. Here's where I see value.
Well, what is he trying to do?
Also importantly, he says, here's where we haven't gone far enough. I at the end of another post I wrote about how Trump kills media and media kills Trump, I kind of put in my wish list back to Zuckerberg, and I put it in a comment to his post. And I think that I said it on the show a few weeks ago, where I think that the internet is built to speak, not yet to listen. And Facebook, ironically, is a platform to speak and to show off your world and signal, not so much to meet new people, not so much to understand people, not so much to have dialogue. And what he was saying was, I think, we know we have to develop this to a next level. And if we're going to have civic civility in society. We're going to have information. We're going to have the mechanism to connect. We're going to have the mechanisms to talk. That's what he's saying. And he's saying, you know, we're only 13 years old. A Mazel Tov Bar Mitzvah just happened, right? And here's where I want to go with the product and the service that I've made and that I give you for free. Let's add. And yeah, he makes money on it, hell of a lot of money, ever more money. But it's up to us to how we use that. But it's up to him to create an architecture. So I would argue this. You know, Twitter has not solved the problem of openness and civility, for example. They've got to work on that in some way or another. Facebook, I think, has to work on mechanisms where people can tell their stories in safe spaces, meet other people, understand people, be brought into dialogue that can be informed dialogue with media's help. That's a kind of next leap of what Facebook can be in a civilization as an enabling technology. Just as print was an enabling technology, and no, it wasn't all controlled by one person, difference, but it was an enabling technology for society to learn how to operate in new ways. That's what we have now.
What is Facebook now, though? Isn't it still a platform for broadcast more than a conversation, or is it?
It's a broadcast. It's the problem with the word there, broadcast, assumed to many. No, it's nichecast, but it's cast.
But it's still a talk, don't listen, mostly.
More so.
One-way medium, right?
Yeah,
Twitter is all one-way. Well, I mean, there's conversations on Twitter as well.
There's conversations, but...
It's really pretty much announce. And I mean, just maybe it's only lately. What's really interesting about Facebook is how it changes from minute to minute. Like this month's a very different Facebook than it was last month. Is very different from how it was last summer. Is that good? I think that's good, right? It's somehow reflecting a zeitgeist. Fourth German word, ladies and gentlemen.
Diese Woche in Google.
Actually, if you include Leichtung Siegsrecht, it's their fifth.
No, I think I already counted that one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Well, one thing I've been around Facebook more because of this fake news thing, and I'm going to be around them a lot more because I'm going to a conference. I had a conference a week ago. I'm going to another one this weekend. I'm going to another one the week after that, and Facebook's present in all of them. So I'm getting a different window on Facebook. I also had somebody from Facebook talk to a community of practice that I convene in product development for 4.5 hours. I learned a lot from that. And what I see is the whole notion, the chaotic development, the throw it on the wall, get it out there, try it. They see it as an organized chaos. They see it as let's try stuff. They look at the data. They see if it works. They kill it. They do the next thing. And that's hard for us to get our heads around because we're used to institutions that work toward permanence.
It's like a snake that sheds its skin every 5 minutes. I mean, it's just...
So society.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
was,
I guess
what was
so.
Weird was that you had the permanence of books and magazines and newspapers. That permanence was what... Gutenberg parenthesis. That was a myth of the Gutenberg era, of permanence.
Yeah, but no, I think before mass media or media of any kind, it was much more permanent. I mean, the culture of Europe in before Gutenberg hadn't changed for 500 years.
Well, indeed, they didn't respect their own current culture. So the goal of the scribes was to preserve ancient knowledge before it was gone. We're a bunch of idiots.
Right. So Gutenberg, I think, was the first shot in what has become now this kind of, you know, whirlwind of change all the time.
Pop culture.
Every, you know, 15 minutes of fame. Andy Warhol got it wrong. It's 15 seconds. It's like boom, 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 boom. Although Warhol was kind of prescient, wasn't he, when he said everybody in the future, everybody will have 15 minutes of fame. I don't know how he knew that 40 years ago, but he was right. And it's only getting worse. And no wonder people are you know, like stressed out and dying. You know, I was just looking at a graph of the life expectancy in South Korea compared to the United States. And South Korea has started to outpace us considerably as the United States life expectancy kind of not only plateaus, but might even be going down. And as I think of it, I don't think it's food or lifestyle. Or I think it's stress. I guess it's stressful in South Korea. I don't know. I feel like I feel like this has become unhealthy. This, you know, and after ever since the election, and I'll cop to this. Farhad Manji wrote that great article about trying to do a week without political news, and he couldn't. It's like he says, it's like trying to eat a fruitcake without it getting the nuts and the raisins. It's everywhere, and we're all kind of stressed out. And whether you're pro Trump or against him, the polarization and the conversations become very heated. And I think it's a death spiral of attention and stress.
Oh, no. Well, that part. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't
it? It is.
Am I wrong? I mean,
Twitter is ready to kill me now.
The number one thing I hear nowadays is, I don't want to put my fingers in my ear. I don't want to hear anymore. It's like, don't. I think people are going crazy. Anyway. I don't know. I really globalized that into our life expectancy plummeting.
You are grumpy today.
I tuned all of that out because I found it stressful.
Exactly.
Done. Will there be
a backlash? I keep waiting for this backlash against social media and the internet in general. People just tuning in. Can we go back to a simpler era?
No. What are you, a Luddite? Jeebus.
No.
Who are you guys sitting in Leo's chair?
I'm ready to go to an island and turn off no internet. Make it darn hard to do these podcasts.
It would. You would. We'd have little styrofoam Leo. Let's talk about something else.
We're going to take a break and we're going to talk about something else.
Worked up. Okay.
Yeah, you're good, Stacey. You're good. You keep.
She is on fire today.
You must do yoga, transcendental meditation.
I do both.
Yeah, I could tell.
You know what we can, when we come back, you know what we can argue about?
It's exactly. Jeff took my advice and boy, is he sorry.
Well, the last time I'm going to do that.
Wow.
All right. Well, I have a positive thing that I want to share.
No, Jeff and I are going to get in a fight. Okay.
Dang it. All right.
Then you're going to make peace.
And I tried the Amplify HD. I have now, I think, tried most of the major mesh systems. Can talk about that.
Oh, we can. Can you see the satellite behind me?
You have, is that, you know what? The Orbi's the one that's given me the best results, but we'll talk about that.
Oh, all right. Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. But first a word.
Well, I liked how the lower third came in and out. I wish you did it more often.
You like that?
That was nice. Yeah, I love that. Leo's moving.
Carson is on vacation.
Yeah.
And so Brian Burnett, who is one of our most creative technical directors, is running the board, isn't he? Yeah. Brian is really, Brian does crazy stuff.
Can I have a top hat?
Yes. Yes. Brian's the guy who put the elf on the shelf and all of that stuff. He can do it all.
Oh, I like you, Brian.
But first.
Now the poor guy's on the spot. Where's the friggin' elf?
No. Brian, I think Brian enjoys this. I really do. He's very good at the TriCaster. He's also the host of a show at Know How, and he's a great editor. He's a great guy. And he's one of the best looking men in the world.
Well, now we got to have a camera on him, though.
Yeah, where is he?
Put the camera on yourself, Ben. Go ahead. Put the camera on yourself, Brian.
He's a very good-looking gentleman.
Brian, you got to do it. Take your moment in the sun.
We are harassing this guy. Yeah. Guys.
I've got a job to do, guys.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it's time to get a new house or refi the old house, it's important you choose the right mortgage lender. This is somebody you're going to have a relationship with for some time. Work with someone you trust for loan origination so that they give you a loan at a great price with the service you want, the flexibility you want. And of course, they're going to be servicing that loan too. And if you go to the website of Quicken Loans, you'll see there's no one better. QuickenLoans.com/twig. Quicken Loans has more JD Power customer satisfaction awards than anybody else year after year after year. They are awesome. Now, they have this new product that you're going to really like that's just for geeks called Rocket Mortgage. It is a loan product that is all online, 100% online, and it's completely transparent. You get to push buttons, adjust the length and rate of your loan in real time, and you can submit all the paperwork, including pay stubs and bank statements, with a push of a button or the touch of a finger, because, yes, you can do it from your phone or tablet in the comfort of your couch. And what's great is because computers, you'll get your approval in minutes for a loan that's tailored to your specific financial situation. Whether you're ready to buy or refi, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/twig. QuickenLoans.com/twig. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, completely online at quickenloans.com/twig. So I'm going to say I still have my Samsung Chromebook Plus. I use it every day. I flip it around to run Android apps or just to browse through Google Plus, and I love it. I love the touch screen. The screen is beautiful. What don't you like? You bought it.
I know. $450. I am the boy who cries lemon.
What don't
I know
you
that.
Like?
I know. Well, let me tell you the ways. It's to me, this is the CR48 of whatever the next operating system is going to be.
That was the first Chromebook we all got. First it Chromebook. Was a black clunky thing.
And this thing is clunky. Okay, so the problem is it's slower. I am so spoiled. Yes. I am so spoiled by my Chromebook
Pixel.
And
you knew it would be because you had a Pixel with 8 gigs of RAM, or no, maybe even 16
so
gigs of RAM.
I'm looking for a machine to replace this. Let me tell you how depressed I am. I cannot buy a Pixel. You can't find them anywhere.
No.
You just can't. Used anyway. And then I almost got caught in a scam today. A guy put up a thing on Amazon, and I quickly found out it was a scam.
Well, what's wrong with your old Pixel?
It's fine, but I'm neurotic, and I want a backup. I want to know what I'm going to use next. So I see this as the next machine. Okay, that's unfair, maybe, because I'm off a Pixel.
Well, it's half the price or less.
It's way too slow. When I'm typing in TweetDeck, I've got a lag in typing.
That shouldn't be.
The scroll is jumpy and bad.
Okay.
The internal is plastic. The external might be metal, but the internal is plastic. To my mind, they took the basic machine they had. They put on a much better screen. Screen is beautiful. You're absolutely right. They put on a metal exterior, but it's still a tinny Chromebook. And all Chromebooks are tinny. And that's disappointing because I put my life in these things now. Everything I do is on Chromebooks. I've got my machine. If it dies, I'm doomed. Doomed, I tell you.
No, it just means your life is in the cloud, Jeff, and you just grab another computer and start working.
Well, he's doomed because he can't find one as good as the one he's got.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly.
But that one is a good backup. Just think of that as your backup. If you had to use it, you could live with it.
Well, but no, here's the other question. So I say, okay, do I replace my Pixel C with this? Right? Pixel C is a million times better tablet than this thing. I couldn't get the sound. I can't. You can't get Amazon to load on it. It won't let you do that. I tried to play a video last night with just a plug-in headset. Couldn't get the sound working. What I have to go through to get, because of G-Spot, what I have to do to get apps loaded on this, you would not believe.
Well, you're going to have that problem with any Chromebook, right?
That's true. But don't forget, I'm either replacing my laptop or I'm replacing my tablet. Each that I have now is miles better than this combination of both. That's what I'm saying in the end.
Okay.
And if it could operate, you know, decently, it would be the thing I'd travel with. Yeah. But I can't type well on it. I can't scroll well on it. The trackpad is plastic and crap. You did complain about the trackpad.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have.
I almost emailed you after our show saying, "Don't buy this," because I actually
don't want to hear me complain.
No, I saw this coming because it isn't. You're absolutely right. If what you want is a Google Pixel, Chromebook Pixel, it's not that. It isn't. It's a third the price or. A little more than that, but less than half the price.
Neither is it a Pixel C.
Yeah, I don't know very many people who like the Pixel C. I think you're one of the few on that one.
I'm weird. I'm admitting I'm weird, but
Walt Mossberg's comment was on the Samsung Chromebook Pro. He had the Pro, and maybe the Pro would be faster. I'm not convinced.
Maybe the Pro's faster. That's
it might
wondering.
Be, but I'm not convinced it will be. I think what you really want is more RAM.
Well,
surprised they didn't put more RAM in that.
I'm very surprised. They didn't make an option. The Asus, I think, enables. Here's the problem.
There are better Chromebooks. Dell makes one that's $700 or $800. That's a Chromebook for work, though. It doesn't have touch.
That's the problem. So I bought this one versus the Asus because of you, for one thing, because you are my.
I don't know if the Asus is any better for you.
Well, I'm not sure, but I also bought this one because of the stylus. But I have horrible handwriting. I'm never going to use the stylus.
Okay.
So the Asus, I think, I thought I read that you could get it with more RAM, but I can't find that.
The 302, is that the one you want to get?
I think so, yeah. I thought I read somewhere that it was going to come available with more RAM, but I can't find that anywhere. So as a expensive,
you know, in terms of functionality, it's very similar.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You know, I wish too they had the twist. Instead of doing the 180, do the twist so you're not exposing the keyboard.
But it does turn off the keys when you have it flipped around.
It does, but I'm always worried I'm going to catch a key on my briefcase or something.
Yeah.
Sitting on the train. So you know, I know I'm a complainer.
Yeah. This is limited to 4 gigs as well. And the processor in both of the Chromebook Pro and the Asus is just an M3, which is not a very fast processor. I don't, you know, it's an interesting question. Why did they, the Asus looks almost identical, frankly. I don't think it's going to be that much different spec-wise.
Yeah, it looks like you get more RAM. I know from my old days, in the early days of Chromebooks when I started using them, that the 4 was never enough. Just not enough.
Yeah.
Now that you're running, you may be running the browser, you know, 5 tabs in the browser plus 1 or 2 Android apps. It went berserk on me when I tried to do that. It was starting flashing, and I couldn't do anything with it. It is a little odd
that they. I'm not sure why. It feels artificial that they've limited it like this. Why wouldn't they have a range?
Well, especially Dell of all companies.
Well, Dell does, but Dell doesn't have touch.
I wish Dell gave me every option I could have: a touch screen, LTE, 8 gigs of RAM, large SSD. I'd pay $1,200 for that. And no, they don't have to have a market for it, but I guess Dell's out of the custom business.
Yeah, they used to be the most customized. I think there must be something going on with
Google
and licensing because Google, why?
Tell us why. So here's why I'm so depressed.
And will
here's
they make plea. Another Chromebook Pixel? Is
That's
question.
My plea. That's yeah. my plea. Just keep the Pixel line going. It's all I want. Because I know your own people use it. I know it's not a big market, but you're wildly rich.
I mean, there's no question at all. I completely agree with you that the Chromebook Pixel 2015 is the best Chromebook
machine
and what everybody should experience. But I think they've concluded that the market's not interested in spending $1,299 for a Chrome OS device.
Because they've made, except for the Chromebook, that's all they've made is the tiny little Chromebooks.
Yeah.
For education and low-end work. They've never really pushed this. They need more apps on it. So there was a story, I forgot to put it in the rundown, but there was another story about the new operating system that's rumored that's going to finally bring together Android and Chrome and how it would do that. You know, if you could really use great photo applications on this and video editing on this and that kind of stuff.
You know, the Dell might be the Dell might... They may have a 13. This is the one you couldn't find on Dell's site because Dell doesn't admit to making this yet. We don't know what the Dell specs.
Well, I even found Dell computers. It was a weird thing on Dell's site. I found them in the business section. I couldn't find a buy button.
Yes, there's no buy button.
What gives?
I don't know. It's not available yet.
I don't want to resort to my first well-known computer complaints on Dell. I'm trying to be nice to Dell.
You might have to call them. I don't know. I tried to buy one too after we talked last week because I completely understand and sympathize with what you're saying.
I need a better processor and I need more RAM. It's a computer.
Can you build your own?
Computer. Chrome OS is a Chromium OS. It is open source. So in theory you could, although it's apparently very difficult. There's one company that does offer a Chrome OS installer based on the Chromium OS, but
then you're not going to get the updates and
it's weird. I wouldn't. It's like a Hackintosh.
You're not going to get Android and you're not going to get all that stuff.
For some reason, it really is tightly coupled to hardware. All right.
Okay.
I can't disagree with you. I understand exactly what you're saying.
My depression is not about the Samsung. My depression is about the end of the Pixel Chromebook and Pixel C.
WWDC, they might announce something. That's not for a while, but.
Google, please. Google. Or find a refurbished machine I can buy.
I think you have to kind of adjust your expectations. And you're right. If you're trying to buy a replacement for the Chromebook Pixel, the Samsung Chromebook Plus is not a good choice. At least I didn't like it either. But I'm perfectly happy with it. For what it is, I love it.
Go ahead.
You can finish up. I was just going to let Stacey.
If you go back in time before I get the Pixel C and I was hauling around the Chromebook for this to be my briefcase machine, I probably would have been pretty damned happy.
Yeah, because it is light and thin and small.
But the Pixel C is faster and better than this. Yeah. And faster and smarter. Yeah. And Android works well enough now across all the Google apps that, and indeed it's better with identity by far than Chrome is.
Yeah.
That I now travel exclusively with the Pixel C, though that's going to go away too. So that's my comparison now. So as a traveling machine, the Pixel C, the tablet is actually better. So you know what I was thinking about, Leo?
What?
Surface.
Yeah.
My mom loves her Surface.
Yeah, they're great. They're actually really
good.
So
that goes to Stacey's point. It's just, Jarvis, stop complaining, get a machine and put a browser on it and shut up.
Yeah. You might be right. Yeah. You could get a max out of Surface, you know, and you'd be very happy.
It's $1,000, but that's not any more than my Chromebook is.
Right.
And you just told us how you're willing to pay for this. And hardware seems to be your hang up. And
Stacey, did you tell him to buy a Surface? I didn't hear that part, but you're exactly
right. No, I did not say to buy a Surface. I was thinking Surface.
You were thinking it, and he just picked up on that.
You guys have really been on a
Surface Pro 4. Let's see, you can get it with an i7 and 8 gigs of RAM. Actually, it looks like you can customize even further here. Let's configure it. You could go up to 16 gigs of RAM. You don't need an i7, but you know what? That's what I would get. I would get an i5 with 16 gigs of RAM and a 256 gig hard drive, $1,399. Then you have to add $129 for the keyboard.
I don't know what I get in terms of being able to do Google Play. I can't do on it.
You can't do Android, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do my stored Google Play. I don't know if I can do Netflix or not. I don't know if I can do Amazon download or not. So that's part of the reason that I carry a tablet around. But Google Play is where all my stuff is.
Add the Surface Pro cover with fingerprint ID, another $160. Yeah, it's pricier.
Let me go back to Stacey's question. Why isn't it possible to easily install the Chrome OS on most any machine? What's special about the Chromebook hardware that makes it?
There's a trusted boot system for security. There is. If you go to chromium.org, there's a Chrome OS. You know, if you're sophisticated enough, there's a Chrome OS download, and you could install it. And there are companies that make it a little bit cleaner. But, it's not that, by the way, you can do firmware, Chrome Core Boot or U Boot. I guess you could get it pretty close. It might be an interesting project.
I would be insufferable complaining about that.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
This is not, I think this is not a
it's
user.
It's not for a.
Yeah, I don't do anything that's like, if I'm going to work on the machine or work on a product and have it expected to work, then I don't.
Yeah, good rule. Good rule.
Otherwise, you'll just need to have
Ubuntu installed on it. You might like Linux. We should get you into Linux.
Well, remember, I tried that from the original Chromebook.
Did you?
Yeah, I did the dual boot thing.
You know, that actually might be a better solution for you than Windows. Is get a good Lenovo Carbon X1 Touch.
Ooh, I think someone said that in the chat room.
Put Linux on it. Really? Yeah. That's a really nice, very lightweight, very powerful laptop. I'm not crazy about it. Somebody's mentioning Ami Duo, so I'm not. I've played with that for a while. That's not a good choice. It's too clunky. All right, enough of this.
All right, enough of that.
Now, Stacey,
I didn't mean to be whiny.
Wonderful, happy thing.
Guys, today is National Margarita Day.
I noticed.
I'm like, I bring you the waffle day, possibly donut day, and today Margarita Day.
Margarita Day.
I can also talk about tech.
What are we doing to celebrate National Margarita Day? That's the question.
I am going to make a margarita.
I used to go camping with a family that specialized in something they called the Juggerita, which was a giant cooler filled with margarita. And you can imagine the outcome there.
There was a margarita machine at my wedding. It was a good wedding.
Wow. Well, you are in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. A margarita machine at your wedding. Wow. Cool.
Again, classy wedding. I was going to ask you guys if anyone here, because you can now. Oh, look at me. I'm so fancy.
You wanted a top hat, right? Well, we decided.
I'm going to sit right here and curl my imaginary mustache.
Along with a top hat, you need a monocle, a handlebar mustache, and a bow tie. So.
That's a fancy wedding.
That's for your fancy margarita wedding.
There we go. This mustache doesn't quite fit my face, I guess. I need to be squishier. Wait, if I back up, does it? Okay, I'm going to do this all day. All right, I'll stop.
We can size it. Just stop moving.
Staying still. I was going to ask if you tried Google Express because you can now do it from Google Home.
What is Google Express? Is that ordering food?
It is. It's ordering food, which... Apparently, it covers 90%. Or Costco or Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah. I haven't tried it yet. So, because I buy stuff on the Amazon Echo all the time. I mean, like every day. I'll say, we were out of Splenda yesterday. I ordered 1,200 packets. Like that.
Dear God. I'm going to not even silently judge you for that. But okay, keep going.
I'm not the Splenda consumer. I never touch the stuff. So Google has made deals with lots of different stores. And yes. Have you done it?
No, I signed up so I could do it.
Let's do it right now. What would you like? Why don't you order some margarita mix?
I already have margarita mix. We always have margarita mix.
I think BevMo is one of the, let's see.
Oh, you should order some tequila.
Tequila. Good. You probably can't get alcoholic. I would guess you can't get alcoholic beverages.
What good is this service?
I'm willing to bet. But you can't get lemon and lime juice. And you can get a can of goat milk.
Goat milk.
Keurig people. Donut shop coffee.
They have fries. That's a good.
They have fries. I know. But I don't think we have a fries near here. We have to go to the South Bay because I love fries.
Do they have king cakes?
It's Mardi Gras, huh?
It is.
Laissez les bon temps rouler, baby. Let me see here. King cakes. Yes, I can get gluten-free king cake.
Okay, that is disgusting.
No, it's all mixes. It's no. But they have sur la table, which means you can get some pretty serious cooking stuff.
Well, now, so you're having to look online to see this.
No, that's just because we're browsing it.
Oh, because you're browsing.
We're trying to figure out
you know what you want.
If you knew, let's say I run out of, I don't know, snacks, I would go, hey, Gugu, buy me some Doritos. And then does it query you? Is there a process? You probably have to put your card in, right?
Well, yes, you would have, but don't you? Google have your credit card information?
You could buy a Nest. You could buy a lot of stuff. All right, I'm going to have to try it because I do a lot of shopping that way.
There is a fee, but it's waived up until a certain time that I do not remember. I think it's the end of April, maybe.
Try Express membership free for 3 months. Free same day delivery on eligible orders. Otherwise, membership is $95 a year or $10 a month. And then there is a delivery fee, you're saying.
I think it's the fee for Google Express that is waived. So you can try it out with the
$95. I can try it free instead of $95. So I'm going to become a member. All right. That was pretty easy. You're right, because they have my credit card. And now I could shop either on the web or better with Google Home. I could say, send me something. That's kind of neat.
Or problematic.
Well, you know what I find with the Amazon Echo is it's often stuff, you know, staples or things I just ran out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, rather than make a shopping list, just go, send me some. which is probably bad for the because of the pollution of the truck and stuff. But I don't know. Is it bad? Tell me it's okay.
I don't know if it's okay, Aaron. I think it's kind of bad. I would love to say, hey, add this to my list. And at the end, like every Friday or something, say, consolidate my list and send me these items.
That's a good idea, Stacey.
We actually,
it was one of the key insights when McDonald's started is the consolidation. Rather than having the ketchup truck go to every single McDonald's, they went to a consolidator and all the ketchup was put together with the pickles and with the mustard.
Right.
And then delivered to the McDonald's, right?
That's right. We would get one big delivery a week from a big truck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was a big supply chain innovation in the day. So why not at a consumer level?
Yeah.
Do you want this now or for a slight discount in your every week delivery?
Well, Amazon.
And imagine if you had that habit of knowing every Friday you're going to get a delivery. Oh, I'm going to add that to my delivery. You'd buy a heck of a lot more because you just throw it into your delivery.
Amazon's funny because they will put them together. And sometimes you'll buy something and they'll say, well, we can't deliver this unless you buy some other things. And then we'll throw it in the box. And then sometimes you buy six things all at once and they send you six different boxes. It's just unpredictable what Amazon's going to do box-wise.
Well, they also, not everything comes from the same distribution hub.
I think that's probably
why, my guess.
Yeah. Look, you can get hardware, too.
Light bulbs!
I can get all my $1.99 LED light bulbs from MaxLight.
Hey, if there's a capacitive touch sink, you just buy that sucker right now, because it is awesome.
Wait a minute. You just touch your sink and the water flows?
Yeah.
Really?
You
really have a very modern home.
I do.
You're kind of like the Jetsons.
It's the best thing ever, except when like people come over or I go to other places and then I'm hitting people's sinks and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it doesn't work.
Use the keyboard. The keyboard.
Exactly.
How quaint.
Talk to the sink.
Does Andrew have a conveyor belt that he can walk the dog on?
Oh, that's a good idea. Should I tell you about how Andrew got very upset with me?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Sure. This is in regards to the Logitech Home Hub.
Uh-oh.
So we had, and I don't think this is Logitech's fault. I think this is error.
You got
so
the Harmony, right? This is the Harmony.
I got the Harmony.
Yeah.
So first, the Harmony Hub only accepts 8 connected objects that
that's
it will
right.
control.
Yep.
So I broke the Harmony.
They have
first
a big.
Step.
They have a bigger one that's more expensive that can handle more, I believe.
Yes, they do, but they don't. They don't really market that as much to normal people.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm not going to add my light bulbs and all this. Auto discovery was lovely. It found a lot of things on my system,
yes,
like all my sodas.
My experience also, because we both did this at the same time. So
yes.
Yeah.
So I have a Roku 4 Plus thing, mm-hmm, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I installed that. And that was, again, the installation was actually super easy. The first time it didn't work. So I should say I tried the Logitech Harmony 2 years ago. And it was a much more difficult setup process.
This was really pretty easy. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if it didn't work, it was basically the most common issue is apparently needing to add wait times to things.
Right.
So it would automatically do that, which is great because most people are not going to be like, oh, it's that's a hard thing to think of if you're not used to that.
Right.
So that was really nice. But I didn't buy the remote control because I really just wanted the Echo turn on the TV thing.
Me too.
And it does break the Roku controller, which I also expected, and I had my phone.
Wait a minute. You can't use your Roku remote anymore?
So the Roku remote doesn't work. And my husband bought it because he wanted, you can actually plug in the headphones on the remote.
Yeah.
And listen to them. And that feature just went away completely.
No, I didn't have that problem.
My Roku
remote still works.
So there we go, because that was my question. And the crazy part is, because last night, Andrew, who is a very patient, tolerant person.
He kind of
yelled. He kind of had
this is the final straw.
Exactly.
I put up with the lights that go on in the middle of the night in a purple hue. I put up with the oven that automatically cooks the bacon. I put up with the sink that you don't have a faucet. But this is the last straw.
Honey,
it was kind of that, and I feel bad because the poor man just wanted to watch TV.
You should meet Lisa. I know it's the same thing. I spent like Friday evening, like half an hour going, Echo, turn on Roku, turn on Roku. I don't know what you're talking about, Roku. I don't know what you're talking about. The stupid thing is I said to Lisa, come on, watch. Let me show you how this works before I actually.
Oh, no, don't ever do that.
I'm learning. I should have a private session with the Harmony and the Alexa before I invited spectators.
Okay, so everyone's telling me the Roku still worked. But what's crazy is I uninstalled everything because
go into your Roku setup because you can repair your remote.
So I did that. I repaired everything. Then it still didn't work. So I took everything. I manually removed all the devices. I took everything off the network. The equivalent of a reboot.
It still doesn't work.
It still doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that was independent. Because in fact, I wouldn't have done it if I had thought that would break the Roku remote. I mean, you can't, I don't want the hub to replace existing remotes. I just want it to be an adjunct.
So that makes me, because I'm like, is this because I didn't order the fancy remote?
No. In fact, everybody in the chat room is saying no, including me. The Roku remote continued to work for me without a problem, which is good because I... Echo, turn on Netflix. Watch Netflix. I have to sit down and spend some time with it.
Okay. So I feel better and I will go back to this with renewed vigor and purpose. Cause I was just like, yes, I did check the batteries for the remote.
And I did have a kind of a frustrating period of time where it was turning off the TiVo instead of turning it on, you know, it would get out of sink.
Oh, it wouldn't be state.
Yeah. And I don't, so fine. But if you go into the computer app, you can't do this on the phone, but if you go into the website and do this, you can say, don't mess with the TiVo. That's, I know the TiVo's needed to change channels, but don't turn it on or off. So there's some refinement to the commands you can give it when you're actually online with it. But it's pretty good. It's gotten a lot better. It was already good. The Harmony One was fantastic because Logitech, when they bought Harmony, one of the things Harmony did that they have a database of all the home entertainment stuff. And over time, that's become super complete. So you don't have to enter in codes or anything. It just knows everything.
That's what I loved about it. I was like, dang, AVEs. And I really thought this was going to be a quick setup. And I should never think that anymore.
Never.
I should never think that.
Ever is. I can show you if I can log into my account. Is it my? It's probably myharmony.com, right?
Oh, Lord. I don't know.
My.
I've just been working from the app.
No, the computer, at least for the setup, you're going to want to use the computer.
Okay, because the app worked just fine.
I know, but there's more you can do, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Like turn on use my Roku remote?
Yeah. Was it the app or the no, it was the desktop software, not the app. It has desktop software. That's put that on the computer and then but that's just for the that's like for the fine tuning and then you don't have to ever use it again.
Oh, you got my vampire face there.
Let me see that again. I just sprinkled holy water.
Oh, is that what you call it?
I didn't know this. We're not getting voice over LTE on Project Fi. I thought we were, but apparently they're now testing Volt or voice over LTE calling for a small group of users on Google Fi. So we do get on T-Mobile anyway, we get Wi-Fi calling, which sounds very good. And VoLTE would sound probably as good if it started using it. So
didn't we have Wi-Fi calling on T-Mobile all the way back in like the dark ages?
It was hardware dependent. Yeah, T-Mobile started supporting it, but your phone had to support it as well. But when a phone does, it's awesome. In fact, Lisa, who's going back to Verizon, said I'll miss that. It's really when we talk, it's like I'm at home on Wi-Fi. She's here on Wi-Fi. It sounds like we're in the same room. It's like Skypers. It's like this, right? It's like Skype. So if you go to cellular network settings on your Pixel or your Nexus, let me just see, you may have an additional toggle.
I haven't had an update on this phone in a while.
Really?
I got an update last week.
Are you pixeled?
Yeah. Of course I am.
Yeah, we got the February.
Am I the Pope?
Are you the old Pope or the young Pope? I got the... security update, the February security update last week. You should have gotten that, mm-hmm. at least, Jeff.
So where am I going?
Settings. Cellular network.
Right. Then
cellular network settings, and then you should see enhanced LTE mode. It's apparently not everywhere. So I don't see it on mine, I don't think. So wait a minute. Cellular networks. I only see data roaming. I don't have all that stuff.
Yeah.
All that fancy stuff. So maybe that's because I'm on Wi-Fi. Maybe you have to go outside. And I don't know.
It's a setting. You'd probably put it on.
We think, right? It's only testing it on T-Mobile's network because Sprint and U.S. Cellular don't have VoLTE support. But if you're, you know, your phone will use
T-Mobile. So if you move from one place to another, you're on.
It just depends. You know how your phone chooses the best network. So if you're always in a T-Mobile area where T-Mobile's strong, then you should be able to use it then.
Can you now tell which network you're on with five?
You have to use that program I told you about. Yeah.
Yep.
Signal Spy. That's it. Google is making blue jeans.
Wait, is this the
not
Levi's?
Not just blue jeans.
No, it's because they're really blue. Blue. Oh my God, they are blue.
Isn't that horrible?
That's to go with the really blue phone.
They have a new Pixel that's really, really blue.
Yeah.
I like that color blue.
Am I blue?
I wouldn't wear. If I wore that, people would think I was the mailman.
That's about as bad as wearing red pants.
Yeah, red.
I have shoes that color.
Yeah, but you're a woman.
You're allowed to.
Here's a.
No.
It's the color.
Andrew has a belt
color
that color.
Of the lower third.
Andrew has a belt that color.
Leo, you would blend in. It's the color of the lower third and the background behind you.
Blend in. I could stand up and you wouldn't know I was wearing pants. Yeah. Dear Google boss.
Or that you have a lower half of your body.
Dear Google boss, my name is Chloe, and when I am bigger, I would like a job with Google. I also want to work in a chocolate factory and do swimming in the Olympics. I go swimming Saturdays and Tuesdays. My dad said I could sit on beanbags and go down slides and ride in carts in a job in Google. I like computers, too, and I have a tablet I play games on. My dad gave me a game where I have to move a robot up and down squares. He said it will be good for me to learn about computers. My dad said he will get me a computer one day. I am 7 years old, and my teachers tell my mom and dad I'm very good in class. So she wants a job. She's from Hereford, UK, and she got a response to Nirpachai. Answered. here's the reply. Dear Chloe, I look forward to receiving your job application when you are finished with school. Thank you so much for your letter. I'm glad you like computers and robots and hope you'll continue to learn about technology. Cute. Signed, Sundar Pichai. Isn't that sweet?
It is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He could have sent her a Chromebook if they were still making them.
Yeah. You know, that would help. Better than that robot. Better than that tablet.
Oh, I thought you were talking about one of the Boston Dynamics robots. Here you go, kid.
German parents have been told, destroy my friend Kayla. She will spy on you. German watchdog classifies the My Friend Kayla doll as an illegal espionage apparatus and says shops and owners could face fines for selling her.
This is how you do IoT device security. You actually have an effective stick, and then companies will be like, maybe buy that or
make visions, that. I have visions of parents tearing off the head of the doll with the crying daughter. The Google told me to do it. I must.
Apparently, under German law, you may not sell, manufacture, or even possess surveillance devices disguised as other objects with the potential jail term up to 2 years.
Daddy.
This doll was one of the top 10 toys of the year in 2014, awarded that by the German Toy Trade Association. But,
really?
But get ready. This is exactly what you're saying, Stacey. Access to the doll's camera is completely unsecured. There is no password. Hackers could access the doll via its Bluetooth connection from up to 15 meters away, listening in on conversations, as well as speaking directly to the child playing with it. You know what? You're right, Stacey. This is, you just need a stick.
I mean, also, this doll is creepy as heck.
My friend Kayla, does your daughter have my friend Kayla?
No, she does not have
any. Is your daughter into This American Girl?
She was for like a hot second.
Mine was.
So we have like three of them.
I had the complete set. And we went to Chicago to the American Girl doll store and museum and had surgery performed on one of them because she'd cut the hair off of the doll because she did not know that it didn't grow back. She just thought we should give them a little trim. So we got new hair put in.
Nice.
Anyway, there's a boy now, American Girl doll boy.
He plays the drums.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a super expensive accessory for your American Girl doll.
Exactly, like Ken. That's all Ken ever was.
But Ken was not $110.
Here's my friend Kayla. You ready?
Ask Kayla almost anything. What's your name?
My name's Kayla and yours is Abby.
She understands you?
Kayla, yes. Millions of things. And so does the neighbor next door.
Eggs, flowers.
He's looking at you right now.
Let's play a game. What's this?
The Eiffel Tower in France.
Incredible.
Nice move.
Kayla, so smart.
And what are you wearing, little girl?
I hear that a lot.
My friend Kayla talks.
It's fun. This is techno panic striking again.
Well,
no, this is actually poor
if it's
design.
Not secured, that's not good.
Oh, not secured. Yes, that part true. But yeah, having a camera in a doll.
Yeah, I don't care about people. So,
but why is the camera available via Bluetooth? What is that all about?
You couldn't send visual data via Bluetooth. It's not, unless it was really low resolution.
So your parents could spy or something.
I don't know.
Google wants people to be able to see you while you're doing VR, so they're experimenting with a fake face on your VR headset.
Can you pick a different face? Because that would be awesome.
Well, you'd only get different eyes.
Well, that could still
go to the next photo.
Yeah, they've also. Oh, that's so creepy. Now, is that his face? Are they clear or no?
It makes believe it's clear.
Oh. So it's still an opaque headset, but your face appears on the front of it because it's using a 3D scanned model of your face that they apply to the outside.
Really?
Oh, man.
Oh, dude. Like, I would totally buy, like, little, like, cat eyes or, like, funny things, but I don't want my actual face.
It actually, it gazes and blinks, so it takes, it actually scans a variety of expressions. So you see his eyes are blinking and looking, and it also color corrects the face to match the lighting of the rest of the user.
Oh, Jeff, you would be.
You'd be white.
We should get this for you, Jeff.
This is weird. It's just, you know, it's just trying stuff.
Yeah, no.
I don't think registration is. Oh, it is open for. So you have a week. You have till this February 27th till Monday to register for Google I/O. They're of course going to do a drawing again. So you sign in, and let me see. Should I do this? I probably should.
Don't you already have?
I'm already
signed
in.
Yeah, you already have.
Okay. Yeah, but I want to get press. I don't want to. Or should I apply anyway? They're not free, right?
No, they're not free.
We want to do Google I/O, do our show from Google I/O again this year if we can. Jeff will be there probably.
Yep.
Talk to your buddies at Google.
My buddies. I know buddies at Google. Now that Matt Cat, is Matt still running the Code for America group?
The Digital Defense Agent. Yeah. Defense Digital.
Matt Cutts, yes. He's still there, huh?
Yep. Yep. I talked to him. He's the boss of a couple of people I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So the Wall Street Journal, for a long time, when you clicked a link to the Wall Street Journal from Google News, you bypassed, it was an end around the paywall and you could read the article. First click free.
It was a feature that Google offered.
Google
for sampling.
Did Google pay the journal for that?
No. They offered it for sampling so that you could get through.
I see. So it was a Google program.
It was a Google option.
First click free. Wall Street Journal's pulling out of it. So now you have to pay. There's just no way around it.
Paywalls are a religion there.
I pay for the Wall Street Journal, so it's you know, it's part of my
stock. I did for a while. A
couple years ago.
I kind of have to for the show,
for
right?
Job.
Yeah.
Oh, we could talk about Joanna Stern's article about, what was it? Oh, let's not talk about it. it's about female assistants, but I realized I don't have an opinion on it, so.
Oh, okay.
Why the problem with all female digital assistants? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where was it? I was told years ago that GPS in Italy had to be men because the Italian men wouldn't listen to a woman giving directions. Is that true?
I always thought that it was, it came from research, and it turned out that this was debunked, that fighter pilots were more likely. This goes back to the voices in the cockpit that would say things like, pull up, pull up. They were always female because men respond, like when they're blacking out or redding out, to female voices better than men. Like it's their mother. So that I was always told that's why in fighter pilot. That they called her Bitchin' Betty. Did you know that?
No. Mm-hmm.
Did we talk about that on the show? I think we did.
I feel like we have. Yes. I was like, I've learned a lot about fighter pilots while participating in
the show. This show is all about the fighter pilots. However, I have my Siri for my iPhone with a male voice because you have the choice. But you don't with Google, and you don't with Cortana, and you don't with the Echo, right? You're stuck with that one
voice. So
what
does that say about you? You want to hang around with guys more?
See, this is the problem, right? Right here is the problem.
I know.
This is the problem. You can't have a man's voice because your buddies will say, oh, you like him better than her, huh?
That's America. That's where we are.
For some reason, actually, this is more of an issue. I don't know if Joanna mentions it. These female voices all sound a little snarky, don't they?
And Siri sounds snarky. I don't think the Echo sounds snarky, and Google doesn't sound really snarky.
I think they do that because what they're trying to do is bend over backwards not to sound all, hi, I'm the female assistant.
I don't think so.
No.
Doesn't want to sound know-it-all?
Well, maybe it sounds like that to you because you're thinking women should only sound available or angry.
Yes. Isn't that the way?
Because I'm thinking they don't sound that way to
Available
me.
Or angry? Is that my choice?
Well, that's how some people, that's how they view women.
Available or angry? Yeah, no, yeah. Well, it's almost like they chose angry over available, right?
Well,
maybe not quite angry, more like passive aggressive.
She's not that way, though, or it's not that way.
You don't think Siri sounds that way?
Okay, Siri kind of does sometimes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, let me see. Okay. You know, you're right. I don't think the Google Assistant sounds that way. You're right. And I can't remember what the Echo.
No,
she just sounds kind of robot. I would almost prefer a robotic voice, actually.
Robotic.
They do sound robotic?
I think they sound robotic. Yeah,
they don't sound like humans. Human. Yeah, yeah.
Who are you?
I'm your Google Assistant, and I know a lot of interesting facts. See, she's perky.
That's perky.
She's perky.
That's a little sexy. She's friendly. She's enthusiastic. She's. You'd figure that an Apple product would sound snotty. Yes.
Yeah, it does figure, doesn't it?
It does.
It's kind of in their consciousness. Anything else? What should we talk about? I'm just looking at other stories.
Tons of stuff here.
Did you see that we have found a sun with seven Earth-sized planets?
That excited me. I watched some of that. That's very exciting. Until I realized they said a jet speed, it would take 44 million years to get there.
Yeah.
That's a jet speed. No one's going to travel through space at jet speed.
It's 40 light years away. It's a long way. It's long enough that's why these people haven't visited us. It's a long trip. They need to get like a camper van and
what I wanted to know is if it's a red dwarf, does that mean that the light you get is red?
It's red, redder.
redder.
There's so, a really, so just the, you know, actually, I just read a long article by Yonatan Zunger, the Google engineer, who is explaining. It really goes the long way around to explain why barns are painted red. And
that's the kind of thing he'd do.
Yeah, in that I learned that for life, at least as we know it, there's a very fairly narrow range of colors from the sun. And of course, mm-hmm. we have evolved to see that range of colors, not ultraviolet, not infrared, but the colors, the primary main colors from the sun. And then it goes on to explain because of the life cycle of stars and supernovas and novas that there's a lot of iron oxide, a preponderance of iron oxide in the Earth's crust, and it turns out iron oxide is a perfect pigment for red paint, and because it's plentiful, it's cheap, and that's why barns are painted red and not purple, because you got to get purple from slugs.
I thought it was
sea
snails.
What does that have to do with the sun?
Yeah, sea snail mucus.
What does that have to do with the sun?
Where did the sun go?
I get the iron.
Well, what I'm saying is if these are Earth, they're Earth-sized, and they do believe these are, you know, at least several of them are Goldilocks temperatures, right? Well, that really limits the range of colors that the sun could be. It could be slightly redder than ours, but not too much redder.
So all of our cheap red barn paint we could bring there, and it would still be reddish.
That's what's interesting. If aliens have eyes, they probably see the same colors we do, or something close. I don't know.
It's dogs and other animals see in infrared.
That's true.
Well, I don't know if dogs see in infrared, but other life forms on the Earth have evolved
in different ways. Yeah, for their particular niche. Super cool stars known as red dwarfs have become popular for exoplanet hunters because you can see the planets better. The suns aren't so bright.
That's like the joke about the drunk looking for his quarter.
He's looking under the light because he can see better.
Yes.
Yes.
That's me and that guy at exoplanet hunters.
That's a dad joke. Definitely a dad joke. Okay.
So there's an AMA with the NASA scientists. It's kind of cool they do that. It's very open. It's very nice. Yeah.
NASA is really good at this because they realize if they're going to get funding, they better be good at marketing and outreach.
They should find a really easy to get to asteroid with lots of very expensive metals on it, because that's what Trump would put them to use for.
That's what we want. Gold would be the best.
Gold.
Gold is the best color.
What are some of the minerals we're running out of? Helium.
Actually, water would be a good choice these days.
Yeah. Water, but transporting water from space is going to be very expensive.
Well, the thing about
desalinization plants.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
These seven planets is they're much closer to each other. They're five times the distance from Earth to the moon.
Oh, neat.
So you could kind of export things from one planet to the next.
Oh.
You could get all pissed off and move to the next planet. Trump's president, I'm moving out of here. I'm going to another planet. I'm going to another planet.
All right, so now. AMA, go ahead.
The AMA, somebody said to the scientists, that was your chance to use the phrase prime directive in a serious way. You blew it.
The prime directive is you can't do anything to change the civilization of the planet.
So then the scientist comes back and says, LOL, we don't have a prime directive, but we do have a planetary protection policy.
Really?
It's sort of like the prime directive, but very real. Basically, we don't want to go looking for life only to find that we brought it with us from Earth. Right.
That's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
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 Oh, hold on.
This just in.
There's a, somebody did a profile on the woman in charge of that.
Oh.
And it's awesome. Here it is. I think it's this one. Let me just make sure. It's a woman in charge of it. And she talked in this thing, in this profile, about how basically everybody hates her. Oh, it's Wired. It is. The article headline is Martians Might Be Real. That Makes Mars Exploration Way More Complicated.
Ah.
And it's from last year. And this woman named, like, I think it's Cassie Conley, basically, is in charge. This is her job, is to prevent NASA from contaminating life on Earth.
Oh, really?
They hate her because she comes in and she's like, nope, we got to spend 10 more hours. She's like fixing this so people don't, you know, so we don't bring bacteria to Mars.
Good for her.
Isn't that cool? I thought this was cool.
Yeah. Cassie, you're right. Cassie Conley.
So.
There are a lot of women at NASA, actually. We've interviewed quite a few.
Did you see Hidden Figures?
Yes. No, I didn't. But I saw the trailer. Does that count?
No, you should go see it. I took my daughter.
It's on my list. Yes, it would be a good thing to take your daughter to. Absolutely.
All right. That was my excitement over lady at NASA whose job it is to ruin people's lives.
Oh, we didn't talk about Uber.
Oh boy! Did you read that? Was that unbelievable?
So an engineer at Uber wrote a Medium post talking about, she no longer is at Uber, talking about her experiences with Uber HR and sexual harassment. And while she was there, not only Susan J. Fowler is in her name. Not only did she experience really just horrific, I guess it wasn't on Medium, it was on her blog, I apologize, SusanJFowler.com, a horrific experience, but she noted that female engineers declined, I think by the time she left from, it was still not a massive proportion, but of over 150 engineers on the team that she was on, which was software reliability, only 3% were women. By the time she left,
her organization was, when she joined Uber, the organization she was part of was over 25% women.
3%
But by the time she was trying to transfer to another engineering organization, it had dropped down to less than 6%.
And she was there, what, about a year, right? And in that time, it's almost Kafka-esque the way she was treated, the denial. And then, of course, Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, said, well, I can't believe it. I'm shocked. And to their credit, they appointed Eric Holder, former Attorney General Eric Holder, to a independent investigatory committee to get to the bottom.
Oh, and Ariana tried to cover her tracks as a board member.
Oh, she was furious. She was furious.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw her response right away. In fact, it was her response that led me to Susan Fowler's piece.
I happened to read, somebody tweeted the piece right after it went up. I then watched the storm, which was fascinating to see. But I'm sorry, we've known that Uber is a culture of jerks and worse from the beginning.
It's the really the programmers thing. And the sad thing was that
at the worst,
HR was protecting
the bros
and managers who were acting completely horrifically towards female employees, and you know, it's very sad. It's terrible. So I think this is going to really add to the no Uber movement. What is it called? The where you hashtag
delete Uber.
Well, Stacey can't have it anyway.
There's no Uber in Austin because you got taxis.
Oh, you know, guys coming in, people who are coming in for South by Southwest, let me just tell you right now, Ride Austin, Fare, Fasten.
Good.
And Wings with a G.
Ride Austin.
Sorry, Wings with a Z.
Wings with a G would be just Wings. Wings with a Z. Wings. Well, I actually, the last time I was at South by Southwest, Uber was sponsoring the pedicabs.
My friend is a co-owner in that pedicab business. It was a good deal for them.
Oh, it was fun. I rode it everywhere.
Wait, we have to go back to this because I read this and not only did my head feel like it was about to explode, but I feel like... In watching some of the original comments, because I also saw this when it went out, because this is the stuff I live for. So many people were saying to her, stop whining, or how do we know this is true? Yes. Yes. Jeez. The early comments had a lot of that. But you still see this here is there's a lot of comments in here saying, get thee to a lawyer, which because that's the only way we're going to hold these guys accountable. In one sense, totally correct. But I think it is so frustrating when women report these things and the instant response is, well, God, why didn't you sue? When we have seen women sue for sexual harassment
never
and
work
seen
again.
How hard yeah. it is. Yes. So I would like to say, yay, lady, for doing this. I have a friend who runs HR at a large publicly traded company and has done a couple of these in the tech world. And she's like, I would never hire for anyone who's worked in an HR capacity at Uber. She's like,
really?
None based on this.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. We need people like the board members saying, because I'm sorry, this is not an isolated problem. And this woman clearly paints how not an isolated problem it is. But people who think they are engaging in quote unquote locker room talk in the workplace, just freaking stop it. It is enraging. Yeah. And there are so many women. I mean, and we saw this on stage at the presidential debate, but it's not funny. It's not helpful. And if you do it, you are just alienating half the population around you, your customer base, and people like me who are way too aggressive, not too aggressive, who are really aggressive and will speak out. But,
Well, and it also makes me sad because this is why there's so little diversity in tech. It can be very hostile to not just women, but minorities of all kinds.
It should make you angry.
Well, it makes me angry, it hurts everybody. It hurts, it absolutely hurts everybody.
Yep. People don't think that it hurts everybody.
Even if it's not about itself, it's wrong. It's incredibly wrong.
Yeah. Diversity is not just a political point of view. When it comes to tech, if you don't have a diverse workforce, you don't have diverse products. You don't have products that work for everybody. You have products that work for programmers. And it's not good for the business. It's not good for us as users. So
And Uber had that. Yeah, because people complaining about sexual assault and that sort of thing.
Was it? There's the pronoun, Uber pronoun problem, too. There's all sorts of things, little, big and little. But obviously what happened to her was very big and is shameful. And, I think writing a blog post, that's a pretty good way to get back at him.
Oh, it was
well documented. I mean, she did really a really good job. It wasn't, and she had been documenting it all along. But at one point was told to stop doing that.
Yes. Well, this is kind of different. So you remember the woman who complained about not having a living wage while working on customer service for, was it Airbnb? Was it, help me out here, guys. This is like a year and a half ago. It was some Bay Area company and everyone got mad at that company for a hot second. And she kind of came across as more entitled than this woman who did a really good job, I guess, in that line. Anyway.
Yeah. And there's also the Ellen Chow, not Ellen Chow. She's
Ellen Pao.
Ellen Pao. That's right.
Yeah. Pao.
There's an example, by the way, of why women don't go to lawyers often, because it can, who did she sue? She went against
Kleiner Perkins?
KP, that's right.
Yep.
And lost in a very brutal, repulsive trial. And it was damaging, very damaging to her. That's why people don't.
She left Reddit then next, right?
She went to Reddit, was there briefly, and now she's running, as we know, because she was the one complaining at YC about Peter Thiel's presence. She's running that diversity-focused startup with, I don't know if she's in YC. I think she is. Anyway, but that's exactly why you don't sue, because you don't want to go through that.
Right. Among other reasons.
Yeah, there are lots of reasons, yeah.
And but it's I like not a the good blog way to change
post.
The culture.
The blog post worked. I think that was a good way to do it.
It had to be really hard to write it without anger. It just let the facts speak for themselves. Yeah. It was really well written. It was very direct. She deserved anger. She deserved a few FUs to the place, and she didn't.
She didn't.
And
of all the complaints that we've been seeing all along about Uber, this is the one that seems like this might do the most to change the culture or bring Uber down, I think. We'll see. It's a pretty big company with lots of funding.
Yep.
Google is just having so much fun with artificial intelligence. This new one is a music-playing piano bot that digests whatever keyboard melodies you give it and tries to respond in kind. It's called AI Duet.
Hi, I'm Yotam.
He's a coder and musician.
This is an experiment called AI Duet. It uses machine learning to let you play a duet with the computer.
Wow.
Making music using like code dueling banjos. But machine learning gives us a different way to go about it. If I was trying to make AI Duet with more traditional programming, I'd have to write out lots of rules. Like,
do you feel like we're at the Daisy moment?
Yes.
Where we're getting closer to HAL 9000. This is neat. This is Yotam did this in conjunction with the Creative Lab and Magenta, which is Google's open source computational music and art project.
So it analyzed tons of music to understand how it should continue on rather than a rule set. Right. And it learned.
Mm-hmm. What about a phone app that raps about what it sees through your phone's camera? It's called Giorgio Cam. This is another one from the same group. AI experiments. I haven't seen this one.
Hi, I'm Eric.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Yotam.
Oh, it's Yotam. He's back. They're coders and musicians.
With machine learning, you can now take a picture and have a computer tell you exactly what it sees.
Eyewear, glasses, vision care.
We wanted to see if we could do something fun with this, and we had an idea. What if the computer turned the things that it saw into lyrics of a song? It could even rhyme about them.
We've got glasses in this spot. Could be eyewear, but maybe not.
There are two parts, image recognition for seeing things, and speech synthesis.
Wickety-wah! This is just throwing up wickety-wah every once in a while.
We use the Cloud Vision API. You can just send it a picture, and it returns labels for what it sees, along with the confidence scores. It started really getting fun when we brought in a song made by one of our musical heroes, Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah. All right.
And for the computer's voice, we used an open source project called Mary TTS, combined with the Web Audio API. This let us add effects to the computer's voice and sync it to the beat.
We've got glasses in this spot, pop, pop, pop.
We had our friends try it out and had a lot of fun pointing it at all kinds of things.
Is that food I see?
It's pretty close.
That's plucked string instruments on my screen. Could be profession, but maybe not. Looks like world to me. Digging that camera operator you've got.
We call it Giorgio Cam, and it's just one example of how you can use machine learning in fun ways.
How do I get it?
You can play with it and get the code at g.co/AI experiments.
That's how. g.co/AI experiments. It's on GitHub. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we take a break and do our picks and numbers and all that stuff?
Was really sharp.
Yeah, but you pissed off some people.
I really did with that 5 kilohertz tone. Whoa. That really annoyed people. I'm so sorry.
That was really annoying.
I really apologize.
I didn't want to come back. No, I don't have anything.
I feel like we're always on the brink, Stacey, at any given show show of you just walking out the door as I'm never coming back. Am I in error on that, or is that actually true?
No, I love coming on. Okay. I'm a bantery, teasy kind of person. We didn't talk about Wi-Fi.
It's going to be, we'll do that in my pick. How about that?
Okay.
So I did find the taxonomy of fake news that Claire Wardell did. It's on the rundown.
I see
under
it.
The Zuck stuff.
Do you want to look at it?
Just real quickly. It's kind of interesting. Authentic material used in the wrong context. Imposter news sites designed to look like brands we already know. Fake news sites, its own category, fake information, manipulated content, parody content. So there's a range, and not all of it is fake news.
I think that's much, I really was so uncomfortable with this whole fake news thing. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I think the taxonomy helps a lot because not all fake news is created equal.
Right. And that's just kind of the economic piece. There's also the political piece, which is propaganda.
Right. Propaganda isn't necessarily lies. It's slanted, but it's not necessarily lies. In fact, it's best if it has a grain of truth in it.
You're bringing nuance to this argument, and that's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. So. I don't know if this is going to help anything.
I've given up. I don't. I've decided to. My new motto is take a nap. No more resist. I'm taking a nap.
Mine is shopping. Go shopping.
Shopping.
See us online
that's
at
good.
Nordstrom's.
Keep the economy going. I'm going to shop with my Google Home. All right. Yes, this is good. I'm going to read this. This is good. I mean, is it helpful to have a taxonomy? I think it is.
I think so.
It's certainly helpful in the process of filtering.
If you saw Don Lemon on CNN, somebody came on and just wanted to disagree with something. And the guy said, that's fake news.
He walked out.
Lemon said, that's
He ended the show. He said, I'm done with that. That's it. Just because you don't like something doesn't make it fake. And he not only kicked the guy off, he ended the show. Which
was there?
I'm not a huge Don Lemon fan, but Don did great.
I am now.
Yeah,
I've done that, but this is a podcast. It's I can walk out, but I can't. I mean, that's CNN. Yeah. Something's got to come back after the break.
Stacey's going to do that to us next week.
I know. That's what I'm saying. At any moment, she'd say, "You guys, I could just have fake hair and just boom, gone." Yeah, just duck under the.
Oh wait, no, I've got a better solution.
Ooh. Oh, hey, you're not the only one that can do that. All right, let me actually, I shouldn't have done that because I have to wrap this thing up. Our show today brought to you by a little robot pal that's happy to be with you and you will be happy to have by your side. I'm talking Curry from Mayfield Robotics. So cute. I was just looking at my pictures of Curry, and I took pictures of all the Curry prototypes. It was so much fun. We went down to Mayfield Robotics and visited, and I have to say, I didn't really get how lovable Curry was until I really encountered her. Anybody who went to CES and spent some time with Curry probably will agree. She blinks, she nods, she doesn't talk. They were very smart. They made some decisions about Curry, not to make it too humanoid so that it stays away from that uncanny valley, that creepy effect. She's anything but creepy. She kind of reminds me of Rosie from the Jetsons. She's kind of tubby, but she's got a lot of sophisticated technology. She's got sensors in her head, cameras. She's got radar. She's got a heart light like E.T. that can light up in any color of the rainbow. Special sensors that keep her from falling downstairs. But she's got like treads in her feet so she can go over door jams. She can wander around your house. She can patrol. As she patrols, she makes a radar map of your home, and then you can assign names to the rooms. So you can say, this is the Curry, this is the kitchen, Curry, this is the living room. And then you can say things like, Curry, go check the couch in the living room and see if the dog's on it, and send me a picture back, because Curry's camera is connected to the internet. Curry also has very good stereo speakers and array mics in there. She's got four MEMS-based array mics so that she can hear and respond, play music, listen to podcasts. She can come and wake you up in the morning, and then you can say, okay, Curry, continue to play my podcast. I want to keep listening to Twig, but follow me around, and you can go make breakfast, brush your teeth, and she'll just follow you around. If she stands in groups, she'll look from person to person. She recognizes people. Very expressive eyes. And her beeps and boops, you know, pretty soon you start to, this is smart, you project onto her this personality. It's so cool. And of course, when she gets low on battery, she's smart enough to go back to her home dock and charge up. Kids love her.
You have video of her with the cats?
I don't. I didn't bring her home. We went down there. I'm on the list. You can get on the list if you want. A pre-order, you have to put in a refundable, totally refundable, $100 deposit. And I have one because I told him I want the first one off the line. $599 remaining at time of a shipment, which will be later this year, probably around holidays or just before, maybe the fall, including taxes and shipping. Curry, K-U-R-I. You can find out more at heycurry.com, H-E-Y-K-U-R-I.com. come. This will be, I really think, I believe your kids will later in life when they grow up, they'll say, oh, I remember when we got our first robot. It was in 2017. She was so cute. I loved her so much, Curry. And then I went to college and she couldn't come with me or whatever. Hey, Curry, HEYKURI.com. Take a look. And if you want, put down a deposit, $100, and it's completely refundable to get Curry later this year. I think it's so cool. I'm excited about this. Now, let us talk. I'm just going to look. Stacy, okay, you got what I see what you're going to do. But we can open the conversation about this, okay? This is actually, yeah, can you plug this in? Because I want to show you the screen on this. This is the Amplify Wi-Fi, mesh Wi-Fi from Ubiquiti. Now, Ubiquiti pretty much created this category for enterprise of mesh Wi-Fi routers, and they're really great. A lot of people use them.
Wouldn't you say Meraki created it?
Meraki did, but Ubiquiti's been around longer than Meraki. And
yes.
Really? Oh yeah, Ubiquiti's been in business for a very long time. And the problem with the Ubiquiti's, they're used in enterprise. We've used them for years.
They started out making WISP equipment for WISPs, right. And I knew about them, but I didn't realize they were doing enterprise routers that long ago.
Think so. When did Meraki start? See, I remember Meraki when their original business. Yeah, their original business was to be captive portals, right? You would have a Meraki router in your house and it would become a captive portal that you could share with other people. And then they pivoted.
Oh, okay. All right.
In any event, we don't have to debate that. But Ubiquiti's been around a long time. Let's put it that way. They make all sorts of great network gear. And the enterprise Ubiquiti Wi-Fi is the best. But they never made a home unit. In fact, their enterprise stuff, a lot of people used in their homes, but very complicated. I had to have a Java-based browser on a PC to control them and so forth. So they've created now a home version. Now, there's two. There's the Amplify HF and the Amplify HD. This is the HD. It's a little over $300 for three units, like a lot of these meshes. This is the base unit. It has a WAN port for your go to your cable modem. And then it has, or your DSL modem, and then has four Ethernet ports, gigabit Ethernet ports. It also has a USB jack, and I'm guessing that that's, actually I didn't read up on it, but I would guess that you could put a hard drive in there. It's very nicely designed. I would say of all of them, this is the prettiest, including an OLED screen that you can tap. It'll tell you the time of day once you've configured it. It helps you configure it on the screen, but it also, if you tap it, you can see how much throughput. So you can see how much bandwidth you've used this month right on the front screen. You can see its IP address. A lot of the information you'd want to know is available right there on the front of the router. And when it's not doing that, it's just showing you a nice time of day and so forth. And it has a little, you can turn all this stuff up, off, or down, totally control it with the app. It has a good Android and iOS app. And it's got a nice lighted base. You mentioned this, Stacey. I know you've had the Amplify. You mentioned these are the base units. And you know, the pro on these is there's no wires. It just plugs right into the wall. And and these just snap off. This is just a magnetic ball joint so that the antenna not only can be aimed, but if some kid comes along and hits it, it doesn't break it off, which is great. The base unit, as I said, for a little more than, I think, $325 includes two satellite units. I would say stick with the HD because this is the one that does AC, 802.11ac. The other one only does A, B, G, and N. This does all of them plus AC. It also has more MIMO antennas, it more frequencies. I set it up in our home where we already have the other systems, other Wi-Fi systems, because I have two networks. And I've always had problems with clashing. But one of the things that it's great to test in that kind of environment, because many people do have congested Wi-Fi environments from neighbors and houses nearby. This did a very good job of finding unoccupied channels and picking the right place to be so that it did not interfere with the existing Wi-Fi setup. I found it worked quite well. I was really impressed with it. The price is good compared to others. Ubiquiti has a very good name in this business, and I thought the software was excellent. This is the easiest one to set up. You don't have to configure the satellites at all. You just plug them in, and they work, which I don't know why the other guys don't do that, but it's fantastic. It updated itself automatically the moment I plugged it in, and it worked quite well. Throughput was good. It was pretty comparable to the Eero, to the Google. They're all about the same. The best throughput I've gotten and the best speed I've gotten is one that isn't really a mesh system exactly, and that's the one you're using right now. Are you ready to talk about the Orbeez or not?
Yeah, I could talk about them.
Yeah.
And we actually talked about them on the show that we recorded this morning too. So you can just skip this part of the podcast if you listen to me there. I found that the Eero's did a better job providing coverage to all areas of my house, but I think it's because my house is long and skinny. So I've got this running in my office, but I had originally had it running. This is the satellite and the other one's downstairs in the middle of my house. So I had this one in the middle of the house and it didn't quite reach the camera in the backyard. Mm. So I had to move it. And then I saw less throughput.
You know what my experience has been? Because I've tried the Eero, the Google, this new Amplify and the Orbeez. I think it really depends on your house a lot, which one's going to work best for you. Because I use the Eero's at my mom's house, and it was spectacular. But because of whatever, the configuration of our house, and because of where the base station had to be, the Eero was not as good as the Orbeez. So
yeah, I think that's like, for our house, it's like, imagine a skinny rectangle. So in the middle of it is we have the main router, and then for the Eero's we have two set up on each end of the rectangle. And that works really well for us everywhere. And I've got it. I mean, cause I have to have coverage outside, inside, up on the roof, down in the garage. It's ridiculous. And that works. The Orbi doesn't give me full enough coverage.
Yeah. I did find that the Orbi was the fastest of all of them. I've had the fewest problems with the Orbi. Orbi's doing something interesting. They're it's dual channel, as are all of them, I think, are 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. And what's nice compared to other more traditional systems, all these mesh routers automatically switch back and forth. They really find the best path for you depending on where you are.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if your gear isn't optimized for that. So this is actually something I had with the Canary Flex outdoor camera. And I've had it with the light switch that I've installed. They don't actually work. Their Wi-Fi isn't configured to work well with the Eero.
Yeah.
And I talked to Eero about why that is. And they blame it on the way that people are implementing Wi-Fi.
I think that's true. It's a mess.
It is. Well, it is. I mean, a lot of the connected device makers have to do extra work.
Right.
Because they're used to Wi-Fi being one way, and mesh is just a totally different animal for them.
Right. So
I was going to ask, do you ever get to the point, is it foolish to ever think that there's kind of an open standard for these things and you can mix and match them?
I think the issue
called
is
802.
I think there is a standard. There's also a wireless distribution standard. The problem is that these specs are loosely written, and companies are very widely go off spec. So it's just inconsistent, and that's the problem.
It didn't used to matter. Like in only some cases, like Apple is really good at making the best use of the available Wi-Fi and channel hopping. Their devices are, right? They put a lot of attention on that because they're freaking Apple. If you've got
I'm going to disagree with you. I have the most recent AirPort Extreme and retired it, because I never was able to get it work properly in my house. And that's why I have been on this quest and I've tried every single mesh solution. And every one of them worked better than the Apple AirPort Extreme. There's also the additional issue.
I was talking about their devices.
Which is, the computers.
The computers and phones and tablets, not
their
AirPort.
No, in fact, several times Apple iPads have been banned from campuses because of how they handle Wi-Fi. They're problematic.
They are sticky.
Really?
Yes.
They pick a band and they hug that band like nobody's business. Yeah.
So yes, I think Apple works well, but it doesn't necessarily play well with others. You know what I mean? If you're the only person using it, it's fine.
Well, yeah. Okay. anyway,
I don't know. There isn't a kind of a flat recommendation, because it's just, I think it is very specific to your terrain. having tried them all, I really like the Amplify in terms of looks, in terms of convenience. You made a good point a few weeks ago that because the bass units plug into the wall, you really don't have the luxury of putting them high up where they'll work better. And that's true unless you have high up plugs for some reason. But I didn't find that a problem. And it was so easy. This was easily the best setup of any of them. And I think it works quite well. I'm going to give this to Megan Maroney. She's buying a new house and she needs a system. And I'm going to give that to her. The Google Home has gone to my daughter's house. My mom has the Eero. And I'm of all of them, the Orbi worked best for me in terms of raw speed. And I've been very happy with that. Now, Linksys has a new system.
A new one that I'm getting that one, actually.
So you and I are both trying all of these things. Which one's best for you right now?
Right now, it's still... It's hard to say. So the Eero is probably the best from a coverage standpoint. I actually really like the Securify ones from Almond. Their mesh networking capability is not as good, but they have some really nice software features.
Yeah. And so, I have respect for Ubiquiti and the kind of high-level stuff that they do. So that's why I feel like this is probably a good choice in terms of keeping it up to
date. You know, their Edge Max router, though, if you've got it, it's an industrial one, enterprise one. Their Edge Max router has been hit by the Mirai botnet. So if you have one of those, make sure you change the default password.
Yeah, yeah. And we actually been recommending on Security Now Ubiquiti's Edge Router X, which is a $50 four-port switch that has amazing capabilities. It's a full operating system. It's very sophisticated. And a lot of geeks have been using the Edge Router X because for $50, you get an amazing switch. And in fact, what you could do is you could put your mesh router on one of those ports and keep your, maybe have two and keep one for IoT and one for your home network and have complete isolation thanks to the Edge Router X.
I've been trying to do that for like 6 weeks. No, 6 months.
Do you have an Edge router?
No, sorry, I wasn't doing it that way, but I've been trying to do a separate network for my IoT.
$50.
But you still have to, like, my phone still has to be on the same network and my computer still have to be on the same.
It's a pain in the butt.
It's just not.
It's a pain in the butt. It is. Okay. We'll get back to you because you have a pick, but Jeff, let's get your number of the week.
All right.
I gave you one if you want.
Give me one. I got another one. I like two. So the one number is that Quant Media says Trump got a record $817 million in free coverage in January. I guess you could argue that once you win, it's not so much free coverage in the same way. It's partly the office, but still.
Well, Obama never got higher than $500 million in free coverage in 8 years.
Which says this is how we now reward entertainment.
You know, however you feel about Trump, there is no question in my mind he's incredibly entertaining. I think one of the reasons people are obsessively reading and watching him is because you can't take your eyes off him. He's mastered
The extreme of him is Milo, right? It's.
I could take my eyes off Milo. I tried to watch Bill Maher, and I was so revolted.
Did you ever get attacked by Milo?
No.
Oh, I did.
Have you?
Oh yeah, back in the day. Oh yeah.
I hope we've heard the last of that business, guy.
When his business went out of business, he kind of became sheepish and apologetic for about 30 seconds and then went back to being Milo.
Well, he's sheepish and apologetic right now. We'll see how long that lasts.
But yeah, I think this actually serves his purpose. I think he wants to be as outrageous as possible.
He wants $817 million a month in free advertising. That's what he wants.
Yeah. There's another number that I thought was worth doing. It's CNN's a study of... I don't know where, University of Maryland, said that 70% of the people who attended the Women's March in Washington heard about it on Facebook.
Wow.
Beating friends and family, which was 61%. Only 13% heard about it through Twitter.
Ah.
Doesn't that say everything? Doesn't that say a lot?
It's kind of the nature of Twitter, though. Everything goes by in a rush and a roar in Twitter.
Researchers interviewed 528 people who attended the march and found that in addition to Facebook driving attendance, 33% of attendees were first-time protesters. So I just
really?
This goes back to your Facebook argument earlier that the impact it has in this way. There's right after the show, there's a town hall for my congressman here in New Jersey, the 7th district, and the Democrats are focused on him for the next 2 years. And I wanted to go. I registered. They never got a confirmation, so I can't go and appear. So I'll watch. There'll be a stream online, which will be entertaining. But the watching the organization online has been fascinating. They came up with a list of questions. The Facebook group that's the liberals, and they said, please take a long list of questions. If you get called on, ask number one. If you get called on next, please ask number two. You can ask your own question, but if you want one, please ask number two. If he refuses to answer number two and you're called on as number three, ask number two. Exactly what you wish would happen in the White House press room. That doesn't happen. They're putting up memes that just say, listen, this guy is one of two Republicans in the state who's holding a town hall, so be respectful, be decent. Here's where you sit so you can get called on. It's just the organization of this. And by the way, nobody's paid. But the organization, the Facebook role of self-organizing groups, which I would go back to our earlier discussion, that's not Mark Zuckerberg organizing it. That's him providing a mechanism where you can organize anything from the alt-right to the Bernie left. And it's there as a platform. And God help us how we organize our own society. But we're watching it happen before our very eyes.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It is. It is.
The world is changing so fast and in unpredictable ways, too. That's the thing that's fascinating to me.
Yep.
Who would have thought? Who would have thunk it? And Stacey, you've got an interesting pick.
So I thought this was kind of fun. And I've been kind of playing around with it, not very successfully because I'm here and my lights are elsewhere. But I've been playing with the Vivaldi browser, which is a new browser. And the reason I picked it up and started playing with it was because you can actually connect it to your Hue lights.
Oh.
And...
wait a minute. Your browser?
Yeah.
To your lights?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, what happens then?
Well, so right now it's just the lights turn color based on the site you're browsing.
What?
Yeah. So you go into, if you download the browser, then you go into, hold on, let me do this again.
That's hysterical.
Is it under appearance? That's what... so I was playing with that on another computer, which is, and so I had to put it on this computer. Let me find my, like, where did that, because the settings thing is huge. Oh, under network, I think is where it is. Nope.
That is so funny.
I'm going to find it and we're going to figure this out.
So what is the point of Vivaldi?
You know, it's the guy who did opera.
Ah, yeah, it looks a little, it does look operatic actually.
Yeah. John von Tuchin? I can't say his last name.
And he says it's a browser for our friends. What is the...
so it's a personalized browser. I mean, it's basically a new browser. Oh, it's under themes. So you can enable your Hue light, enable Hue theme integration. I will say it's buggy.
Requires a Philips Hue lighting system on the local network. Finds the bridge. And then changes the lights to match your theme?
Is that why you had to run downstairs before the show and turn it on?
Yes, because I wasn't playing with it on this computer. So I thought it was connected to it, but it wasn't.
I see now. Okay, got it.
So yeah, you click that button and then you connect the lights. I will say, challengingly enough, it only found 4 of my 10 or... many Hue lights.
Well, Stacey, in all fairness, in your house, it's a little crowded with things.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
There is. So I'm like, you know, and I'm not sure.
It's talking to the toaster. It's talking to the doorbell. It's talking to everything.
So, yes, right now it's not as cool. But I'm hoping if this becomes really popular, we could do it. Because how cool would it be? Imagine this with me, you guys. When Twig calls,
come along on the ride, Miss
Stacey. Oh, your lights change.
And my lights just blink.
Yeah.
And because, you know, actually that's not via the web.
That wouldn't be on the browser either. You'd have to, yeah.
Okay, hold on. Let me pick a browser thing. Hold on. New mentions in my tweet stream. That would be too overwhelming.
Sure.
But like, you know, my husband likes using Hangouts. He's the only one. So when he pings me on Hangouts and I'm like sitting here going, oh, that's Andrew. You know, my lights could come on.
Yeah. It's like having a ringtone.
Exactly.
Only it's a light tone.
It's a light tone.
Vivaldi is free.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Philips Hues are not. But if you have them and you want to play with it, check it out.
That is wild.
So, yeah.
A browser that changes your lighting color.
And it changes actually the browser. So if you do it, the cool thing is, because I'm a freak who likes my what's it called? The dock on the side of my computer instead of on the bottom or the top. Yeah. You can actually change your tabs. So my tabs now run, instead of across the top, they run down the side in the Vivaldi browser.
Oh my God.
I know.
Your whole thing is on its side. I'm surprised your head isn't like this all the time.
I like that cute puppy look where they're like, "Oh,
aww. Aww. No, actually, I keep, you know what? Your dock should be on the side because your screen's wider than it is tall. So there's more room on the side.
Thank you.
That's just logical.
Thank you, Logic Man. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you can put your tabs there.
I don't know if I want my tabs there. I guess so.
Now.
I guess so.
And it changes, like, I think Twitter is blue. I'm trying to think of what else.
It's a very aesthetic browser.
It's very pretty. It's fancy. Yeah. I haven't spent, like, ages. I haven't done, like, master tabs or done anything crazy.
I'm so hooked on Chrome that every time I try one of these alternative browsers, including Opera, I go, it doesn't look right.
And that is fair. But this is highly customizable. I'm going to play with it. I always force myself, if I'm going to use a browser, to use it for a week.
Yeah.
And then I can make
it.
I'm
looking at it. It has some nice features.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't hated it using it for 24 hours. So.
There you go. I like that. Now I can choose my tab bar position and do like Stacia does and put it on the left. And now, what's start page? Purple Lake. Purple Lake. Purple Lake. Nice. Start browsing. I wonder how Facebook looks in a purple lake.
See, they changed Facebook to be blue to match your site. Now go to like red.
You mean like the YouTube.
YouTube.
Let's see. I'm YouTube red is the.
Let's see.
Look at that. And so, and my tabs would reflect that too. Oh, and these aren't just tabs, they're thumbnails.
Yeah.
Nice.
See?
All right.
It's fancy. So, yeah, give it a whirl.
It's Vivaldi.
Or don't. It's up to you.
Yeah, it's the Vivaldi browser. I think it's Vivaldi.org. Nope, Vivaldi.com. If you want to find out more. A browser for our friends. You know, I think the reason that you see people still write browsers, it's one of those categories. A lot of times, you know, people go, well, Microsoft owns the word processor. I'm not going to make a word processor. But they don't do it about browsers. And the reason is you can make a lot of money with a browser through search referrals. And so, you know, this is one of the few pieces of software you can give away and actually, you know, make a killing on.
It's hard to get to critical mass, though.
But that's right.
Yes.
It's all about getting a critical mass.
And we actually had this. I talked with John because we were talking about bringing open web standards to the Internet of Things. So this guy is he's got so many lost causes and windmills he's tilting at. Yeah. So, you know, good for him.
Oh, it's one of those apps that's written in Node and JavaScript and React. So the only drawback to that, it's really cool. A lot of, you know, I'm seeing a lot of open source projects work that way. So it's basically a browser written as a browser, but it can be, that could make it sluggish. So do you notice, does it feel a little slow?
I haven't, you know, today was podcasting and this day, so I don't have 1,000 tabs open.
Yeah. That's catchy.
Let's see if it breaks Jeff's non-Pixel.
It will break his Samsung Plus, that's for sure.
There it is.
You can't use it on Samsung Plus.
Well, no, actually, when I was trying to figure out how to get Amazon loaded, one of the workarounds involved putting a different browser in so that you could use that to then go into the settings. It wouldn't let me do it unless I went to dev mode. But I could download another browser under Android.
Oh, you can.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
That changes
Wacky,
everything.
Wacky, huh?
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have completed this journey down the highways and byways of the minds of Stacy and Jeff and Leo that we call Twig.
Let it be known that Stacy and I agreed a lot. I don't think we disagreed that much, Stacy.
We didn't.
No.
I'm trying to, you know, heighten the drama for people just a little bit.
Create some tension.
I'm getting all real housewivey on you.
The Real Housewives of Austin, Texas. The Real Housewives of IoT. Now, that's a show I'd watch.
Have you ever had kind of a...
I got so excited because I was like, oh, the pranks you could pull on people with IoT.
I know. I'm telling you. This is a podcast. This is Desperate IoT Wives. Actually, in your case, Desperate IoT Husbands.
Yeah, poor guy.
Stacey!
Yeah,
poor guy.
I gotta figure out what's wrong with the Roku.
What did you do with the remote, Stacey?
All I ask is to watch TV and get out of escape from this house.
I can't get Dr. Phil. Stacey Higginbotham, she's the queen of IoT. Stacey on IoT.com or IoTpodcast.com, that great show she does every week. Now at episode 100 with Kevin Toefel in her second year. Woot woot. She's on the Twitter at GigaStacey. Thank you so much for being here. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism, those lucky kids at the City University of New York, where he's creating a new generation of people without jobs.
Hey. They got jobs.
I was joking about my son, who really wants to be a journalist. And you know what? He's smart because he realizes, you know, he wants to intern at Vice he realizes what the future is going to look like, and he's learning photography and writing and the whole thing. And
he said, come to CUNY, you know.
I know. I told him. I said, Jeff wants to talk to you. I would love for him to go to CUNY. I think what he's going to do, and this would be my advice, is to get some job experience first, a couple of years under his belt. I think going to graduate school, having worked a little bit, makes you appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah. You know what you're getting out of it.
Yep. You can also read Jeff's books, What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, and of course, Geeks Bearing Gifts. And he blogs a lot at buzzmachine.com, actually less lately.
At Medium more, yeah.
More on medium.com.
For now.
And joins us each and every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC for this week in Google. I hope you'll do the same. Join us live. You can watch live on our website, twit.tv/live or live.twit.tv or youtube.com/twit because we're on YouTube live or ustream.com/twit or twitch.tv/twit. Yeah, there are lots of places you can watch live. If you do watch live, though, please take advantage of the chat room. Be in there at irc.twit.tv so we can interact with you. And if you can't be here live, you can always be here after the fact on your schedule. We have on-demand audio and video of every show we do. Starts at our website.
Wait, there's video?
Yes, I know. I know. I'm trying to keep that from you.
I just thought it was audio. I didn't realize there was video, too.
Trying to hide that from you, Stacey. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just download the podcast.
Twit.tv/twig. Actually, at some point, I shouldn't say this, but at some point, I'm thinking most of our audience is audio. It would be all right just to do these as audio. There's nothing to see here.
Oh, I wouldn't have to put makeup on. That would be awesome.
Neither would I.
See?
And Jeff would have to spend so much time getting to be less white or pink.
But then we wouldn't see Jeff in his famous locales around the world. That would be sad.
Yes.
Yeah. We did video because it's fun. And if you get to watch the video, even if you don't do it all the time, once in a while, it does. You develop, I think, a stronger bond to the show and to the hosts and stuff because you're seeing them and they become more people like.
It added cost for you.
It adds cost and trouble.
Yeah.
And if I want to move to Ecuador, I really don't think I can do video anymore.
Why? They've got broadband in Ecuador.
I don't want to build a studio. I just think I want to go down there, have a microphone, have a nice patio.
Murder rate in the Americas?
Ecuador? Okay, I'm not going to Ecuador. Somewhere. I was thinking maybe Costa Rica.
Yeah, I'm going there. That's a good place. You should go to Costa Rica.
Is that where we're
going to
all end up?
I don't know about all of us.
I need somewhere that I can go and they would just let me be there.
Have a margarita.
It's Margarita Day.
It's a big one.
It's a big one.
Beautifully timed. Mm. Oh, that was perfect.
Here you go, Stacey. Oh.
They have margaritas in Sweden. I might
grab
I might go to Sweden.
it's so cold.
See, if we didn't have video, we couldn't do that, Leo.
That's true.
Yeah. We're talking about taking Brian out of a job here, possibly. That would be terrible.
No. Brian will always have a job. He can You can do so many things. Ladies and gentlemen, he's giggling in fear and horror. Ladies and gentlemen, I do appreciate your being here. If you want to help us out, there's a couple of ways you could do it. Of course, our sponsors are our lifeblood. So if you ever hear a product you are interested in, please take advantage of that and make sure you mention us. You can also help us get new sponsors by filling out the Twit survey. Just take a couple of minutes, twit.tv/survey. We're not looking for information about you specifically, but just in aggregate, who listens and watches and that kind of thing. It also helps us tune our programming because we are curious. Do you watch video? Do you listen only to audio? That kind of thing. Twit.tv/survey. If you want to get a nice Twit hat, it's available in red, and it just has the Twit logo or says twit.tv. We've got the snap brim flat brims for you youngsters. For you oldsters, we've got the curved brim. You get your pick. It's all at along with t-shirts and mugs and all sorts of stuff at our store, twit.tv/store. We'll be back next week. I hope you will too. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.